Greetings, all you 99%ers. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. This is Alternative Visions. Okay, we got an interesting show today. As you know, Alternative Visions focuses on global U.S. Economic and political crises. What's happening? What's happening in the U.S., Europe, China, Latin America, emerging markets, etc.? Why is this attack and decline of living standards continuing, not only in the U.S., but globally, against the broad populace by those elites and capitalists as the capitalism itself in the 21st century evolves and implements new ways to squeeze wealth and accelerate its own at the expense of the many? Okay. Latest report here just came out. Corporate stock buybacks in the U.S. are running at a higher rate than they were back in 2007. If the rate continues this year, we're looking at over $1.5 trillion in stock buybacks in 2016. This comes on the heels of $5 trillion redistributed to wealthy investors in terms of stock buybacks and dividend payouts over the last 5 years. You know, corporations are the conduits that pass through all this great wealth to their capitalist investors and their wealthy 1% households. Buybacks keep the stock market from collapsing. You know, that's mostly what a stock buying is by institutions and buybacks here in the last year and a half. And buybacks are financed, by the way, by corporate bond issues. Also in record multi-trillion highs here in recent years. And, of course, those bond issues, corporate bond issues that corporations sell their bonds in order to make the stock buybacks, are made possible by the zero rates from the central banks, like the Federal Reserve. So we've got this institutions of the state, central banks, and other state institutions that keep this big Ponzi scheme of the 21st century capitalist economy afloat. At the same time, this free money appears not to be enough for them. You know, income inequality by redistributing $5 trillion is only half the picture. At the same time, they're cutting wage incomes and social programs. In the U.S., what do we got? The working class has been devastated in recent decades by what? Offshoring of jobs, first manufacturing, but now even services. You know, last week we talked to the Verizon strikers, and they're getting rid of their jobs, too. We've got this amazing trend of contingent labor, part-time temp contract jobs. That's about all you can get nowadays, except for a few specific industries. And in Europe, 90% of all the jobs created in the past year have been contingent, part-time temp jobs. And then we have, coming right on the heels of all that, the so-called gig economy, where workers got to provide the capital. Employers don't even provide the capital anymore. They provide software, and they tell you where to go, and you got to use your own capital and your labor. And behind that, we got the workerless economy coming. Driverless cars. Watch out, Teamsters. Here comes driverless trucks and the end of your industry. Okay, well, in the U.S., this is all well advanced, you know. These new ways of squeezing wages and workers, while at the same time they shuffle the money in trillions into their own bank accounts going on. This is not just the U.S., it's global, but the U.S. is among the leading experimenters in this area. But Europe is rapidly trying to catch up, you know, and a big part of that catch-up is what they call labor market restructuring or labor market reform. Code word for let's squeeze the workers even more. Okay, since the creation of the euro in 1999 and the Lisbon Agreement in 2000, you know, this has been the whole focus, squeeze the European labor. You know, that's what this fight over Greek debt is a lot about, you know, squeeze labor and squeeze workers so that they can pay the interest to the German and Northern European bankers. The whole austerity and sovereign debt in Europe is the same thing. The Eurozone has failed to boost its economies through exports and trade because the global economy is slowing down everywhere, right? Of course, German economy and bankers are boosting theirs at the expense of the rest of Europe. But a year or so ago, they had a pilot program there in Spain of labor market reform, which was successful. They drove down wages even more and subsidized exports. GDP rose, and the Spanish economy is recovering. 21% unemployment. Tell me that's a recovery. Well, maybe for corporate exporters and wealthy investors, but not for the rest. Now the focus has shifted to France, right, where the new target is labor market reform once again. And we're going to talk to a guest here who's going to tell us what's going on in France, because that's the latest iteration of this squeeze the working class even more. Let's deepen the contingent labor trend. What they want is the right to fire and lay off workers, full-time workers. They call that flexibility, to undermine unions, to cut pensions and benefits, which I call social wage and deferred wage attacks. End a 32-hour work week in France, right? And really attack full-time workers the way they've been building the part-time contingent worker base. In other words, they really exploit the part-time workers, and now they want to have the same rights to exploit full-time workers over there. Well, it's not just a full-time worker focus, but anyway, capitalists are on a kind of a hiring strike throughout Europe. We're only going to hire part-timers, and when everyone complains, we want labor market reforms so we can squeeze full-time workers. Anyway, that's what I have to say about this thing in a broad perspective. But we want to talk to somebody, our guest here, who's an eyewitness to what's going on in France, because France is important, not just for France, for all of Europe, and it reflects another version of this new way of attacking workers and wage incomes and so forth globally. This is globally. Labor market reform is global. They call it restructuring reform in Europe. Here, we don't even call it that. We don't even have a name for it. We call it the gig economy. We call it flexible part-time jobs, right? We call it the driverless economy and so forth. The capitalist class here is not as overt about it, but the same thing's going on everywhere. I'd like to welcome Alan Benjamin, my guest today, who is an eyewitness to what's going on in France, spends a lot of time over there. Also, he's a member of the San Francisco Central Labor Council and the U.S. Labor Fight Back Organization, and I'm sure he'll tell us something about that and where we can go, both to find out more about what's going on in France and here. But let's let Alan tell us specifically what's going on the ground in France. What do they consider labor market reform there? What's at stake? And most important, what kind of a resistance is growing? Alan, you with us?
I am indeed. Thank you, Jack.
Okay, Alan, why don't you just jump right in and tell the listeners here, what is happening? What is this labor market reform thing in France? And I understand there's some major protests and demonstrations, and it looks like, French workers are beginning to organize to resist this.
I think your context, Jack, is absolutely right on the mark. What's at stake here, not just in France, but throughout Europe, through the European Union, the Maastricht Treaty and all the different treaties from Lisbon on down, is to impose the U.S. of flexibility, unemployment, no labor rights or minimal labor rights, and to dismantle the whole welfare state that existed in Europe after World War II, to dismantle collective bargaining agreements, single-payer healthcare systems, strong labor codes that have codified the huge gains that were made by the workers in the 30s and later in the aftermath of World War II, where there were huge nationwide general strikes to demand frankly, to demand the overturn of and to organize against capitalism. And the capitalists had to make huge concessions to stem that movement that was challenging the system as a whole. And that, those challenges and concessions were very pronounced in France. A very advanced labor code that protected workers, protected collective bargaining, prevented this kind of contingency gig economy, these individualized work contracts, these part-time, all of the attempts that have been made in France to reform the labor code for the last 20, 30 years have failed because of the massive resistance of the French working class and the French people as a whole who've said, you're not going to touch our healthcare system. There was a huge movement in 1995, hands off the Sécu. The Sécu is not Social Security, it's the National Single-Payer Healthcare Plan and includes the issue of Social Security. So what's happened is, of course, Hollande and Valls, Socialist Party, elected in 2012.
And he's the president. He's the president of France,
the president.
Right, Hollande? Yeah.
Yeah, François Hollande is the president. And they are committed to the European Union and to its goals, totally subordinated to the Brussels agenda of dismantling these rights. And they, for a number of years, have sought to co-opt the unions and to jumping on board with this program. They tried many different things, but the unions, because of the resistance from below, every time there was an attempt to have a social roundtable or social dialogue, there were resolutions at all levels of the unions, mainly in the CGT and in Force Ouvrière, FO, saying, don't go to these dialogues. They're just attempts to co-opt, to get us to accept, to swallow the bitter pill of austerity, structural reform. We don't want it. And the leaders themselves, because of this resistance, refused to go along. That was mostly under right-wing governments. Hollande offered them a bigger seat at the table and said, no, we want you to help us be the architects of the reforms. And we're going to create a social dialogue. We're going to have a social dimension to all of this. And brought on his Minister of Labor, Social Development, and Professional Development and Social Dialogue, Myriam El Khomri. And she said, we're going to put together some, we're going to finally do this. And for 10 weeks now, there have been massive protests against the El Khomri labor reform law, a law that would gut the labor code of 1946-47 that would dismantle collective bargaining and do everything that you've talked about to put the capitalists back in the sole driver's seat to dismantle what they've been doing little by little, by the way. The Goodyear workers' plants have been shut. Unemployment is growing in France. And the bosses have been able to do this, but it's piecemeal, and there are fights every time. The workers at Goodyear laid off. Nonetheless, they occupied. They did a sit-in, and they just essentially took over the plants. There was much like the sit-down strikes in auto in 1936 in Detroit. They took over the plants. They were dislodged by the police. There was a huge fight, and there's been a somewhat of a stalemate. They haven't been able to move ahead and prosecute as they would like. And that's because of the rigidity, so-called, of the labor code. So there's been, I don't want to pretend that there hasn't been already the erosion of many of those rights under the different governments. But fundamentally, the bosses and the government need a restructuring, and hence this reform law. And the reaction, the resistance has been huge. CGT, Force Ouvrière, FSU, and Solidaire, the four of them, not the CFDT, which has been in the pockets of the governments for the last 40 years.
Those are union federations, right? The CGT and
these are all the
so
trade
forth.
Union federations.
Okay.
Said, we're not going to accept the reform. We're going to fight. It should be withdrawn. And there have been five, and I'll get into this because there's controversy over the tactics used by the unions. There have been five national days of action and strikes, and the government has said, we will not budge. And these have not been insignificant. March 31st, 1.5 million people marched in the streets across France, and 3 million people stopped work in support of the one-day strike to demand the withdrawal of the El Khomri labor reform law. And it went on in April. There have been now 6 national days of action. The latest was yesterday, and it continues today. The first time it's a reconductible. They've rolled over. It's a rollover till today. But the truckers, rail workers, chemical workers, dock workers, truckers have been out on strike, and there were massive protests across France, again, to demand the withdrawal of the program. And Hollande said he wouldn't do it. Moreover, Hollande said because the Congress, the Senate, and the National Assembly, because of this pressure of the streets, have been unable and unwilling to approve the law in the Congress. And that, again, is because the unions have not folded. They have not given in. And this polls show that 78% of the people are against this labor reform. Even people who constantly complain, as they do, and I've traveled for the last 25 years to France roughly 6 times a year for work with the unions. They complain that there are all these one-day strikes and that people can't go to work, but they're all saying, but I'm with them. It's a very contradictory thing because they know that they will be affected.
Can you clarify? I think you mentioned that the legislature wouldn't introduce these changes, but Hollande is by executive action introducing them. That was these bypassing legislations that I'm going to impose it anyway.
The French Constitution of 1958, the Constitution of the Fifth Republic, is a very Bonapartist one. Charles de Gaulle demanded that he be given the right to rule by edict should the Congress be at stalemate, as was the case throughout the Fourth Republic prior to the war. And he said the president has to be able to step in and stop strikes. They have to be able to step in and impose by presidential decree whatever they like without approval of the Congress. And that's Article 49.3 of the Congress. And Hollande, because of the impasse in the legislature, said, this is enough. We haven't been getting anywhere for 10 weeks. And he announced 5 days ago that he would, if there was no progress, if the unions didn't join the social dialogue and sit down to discuss, and they were open to amendments and to improvements, but the question of totally withdrawing and not putting for a vote, this was out of the question. And so he said he was going to resort to edict. And that further infuriated the French people. That's one of the reasons you'll see if you saw TV and France Inter or RT1 or any of the TV stations that carry European news, you will have seen that everywhere the demand was withdraw El Khomri and down with dictatorship, down with 49.3. So the question of democracy and reforming the very undemocratic institutions in France, which were held over from the de Gaullist, Bonapartist decree-oriented politics. So people are raising the issue of democracy, they're raising the issue of the institutions, they're raising the issue of the capitalists and their runaway economy. It's struggle continues. What's new is the youth are back in the streets, Jack. They were a big presence on March 31st, because they say, we don't want contingent McDonald's jobs. We want real jobs with benefits like our parents and grandparents had. We're not going to accept this contingency part-time economy. And they've been out in the streets with the workers, with the unions, that unity, and the government repressed them. The repression against the youth, not just yesterday, but the 31st, was major. Cracking heads, provoking, and there are 400 students that are charged with very serious charges, up to 12 years in prison. And yesterday, the confrontations, especially in Bretagne and in the northern part of France with the young people, was front page news. But it's this unity that they can't tolerate. And the student union, which is part of which is totally beholden to the SP government, you know, denounce the students for being irrational and not willing to compromise. The government's willing to sit down with the students to reform. And the students have said, you don't speak for me. We speak for ourselves. So it's a very, very, very interesting period. It also is raising, I'll just add this one last thing, the unity with the British workers who are fighting to a sector of it, them rather, the militant wing, the rail workers and others, transport workers, fighting for the Brexit to exit the European Union, because they understand that it's not this great social space to improve and lift everybody's salaries, wages, and working conditions, but it's a free trade zone to bring everybody down to the lowest common denominator, which is the United States model. And so they don't want it. So now in France, you saw for the first time yesterday, posters and handmade, but also union banners, Frexit, F-R-E-X-I-T. We have to withdraw from the European Union, and making the links with Greece and all the attacks on the Greek workers. So it's a period of great search for answers, for mobilization. People are tired of these one-day strikes. They're saying the government's not going to budge. We need to have one continuous general strike until the government withdraws its plan. And all these one-day things, all they're doing is wearing us down, getting people pissed off at us because we dislocate their life. They're willing to support us for a one good nationwide continuous general strike to against this government. So that is that was echoed widely at the National Congress of the CGT Trade Union Federation 2 weeks ago, and it shows that there's a real maturing in the political thinking and action of French workers. They've had it.
Let's back up a little bit, can you identify for listeners what are the elements of this so-called labor market reform? What actually are they, Hollande and those behind him, trying to achieve in terms of changes to the labor code? Just at a high level, can you identify what those changes are?
Well, the first one that the bosses, MEDEF, that's the Chamber of Commerce, the bosses' union, the MEDEF says that it's impossible to fire workers, that the labor tribunals always rule in favor of the workers, and that's because of the structure of the labor code and the way these tribunals are set up, that the tribunals should be, they're not saying independent because they are independent. The tribunals should be mandated by a reform which places productivity first, that the new criterion should not be what's in the interest of the collective, of the workers. It should be what's in the interest of elevating productivity. And so that means more flexibility for the bosses to fire, and the elimination of the Conseil de Prud'homme, which are these tribunals, which have, they claim, in 90% of the cases ruled in favor of the workers because of the too great strength of the unions.
Let me interrupt. You hear that, all you listeners here in France under the labor code? You can go to court if the boss lays you off. I mean, that's amazing thought here in the U.S., isn't it? But I'm sorry, I need to do.
Yeah, no. And
just
it's absolutely anchored in the history, the consciousness of the workers. You know, we have jobs, and we're going to and it's not that they're not productive. It's that they're just not willing to be fired and have plants closed down, and have them moved offshore and have the whole casino economy come in and replace productive workers with all these new technologies and to get rid of jobs. They said, no, we have to come first. And it's not that they're unwilling to adapt and to understand the exigencies of new changing economy. It's just that they don't want to be the victims of this whole casino logic, this whole mad economy that actually you've done probably the best to bring to our attention. So we thank you for that. And a lot of what you've written is disseminated widely in France. I often present it to union bodies where I go, and I say, don't go there. This is what it looks like. And I show them what you write about the U.S. economy, and it just stands their hair on end. I mean, they just can't believe that this is, and I say, this is what's coming your way unless you fight. And the whole healthcare system, the dismantling of one of the best single-payer healthcare systems in the world in France is already begun, but it nowhere near what the bosses want. So anyways, the Conseil de Prud'homme is one. The whole concept of collective bargaining agreements, they have to, and collective rights. There's a whole drive to do what's called individualization of rights and to understand that the concept of collective bargaining has to be modified in favor of individualized rights. So that's a huge, huge issue. It modifies 14 of the articles of the labor code, and it's around that which most of the discussion's taking place. There's the question of professional formation. The government has played a big role. If there are layoffs, everybody's entitled to a job. They can get up to 1 year of paid government professional formation to find a job in another sector with an obligation that after 1 year, they find a job. So the government has a role and plays a role in urging companies, and it has to do with the state sector. You see, there are a lot of state jobs. There are a lot of state services that are able to hire these workers who've been laid off. But the whole drive to privatize public services and enterprises, there's a whole drive now to privatize EDF and GDF. EDF is the Electricité de France. It's a national public utility, and it's for electricity and gas. And there's a drive to privatize and shut down plants. So they've been on strike yesterday and today at EDF and GDF against the labor law reforms because they understand that it's tied to the dismantling of the state sectors and this whole intricate way in which workers laid off can be retrained and retooled to work in the state sector. But if you don't have a state sector, these workers are just out in the streets.
So the practice in France has been, if you're laid off under the current labor code, if you're laid off, you will get some sort of compensation, unemployment, let's say in training for a year, and then you have some right to a public sector job if you can't find one after a year. Is that accurate?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
That's called professional development and reclassification. They can't impose it on the private sector, but they can find conduits in the state, in the public sector people. And it's not been without friction. A lot of youth have said, well, you know, our jobs are being taken. But so long as there was a large public sector that was functioning in hospitals and healthcare and public transportation, there was a way to absorb. But this new massive unemployment, François Hollande announced yesterday that he had turned the French economy around, and it made me think of what you were saying about Rajoy in Spain. Yeah, at the expense of massive unemployment, and that's only formally, according to, you know, just how do you talk about an economy being turned down when in Spain 50 to 60% of youth are unemployed, and in France it's now up to 40% of youth unemployed. So you have this crazy notion that they're going to dismantle all of the social relations that have existed in France since the end of the war, product of a huge victories that were obtained in the post-war period with the nationwide strikes and mobilizations that took place in 46, 47. So I'm sure there are many more points in the labor reform program, but those are the ones that have been really at the center of the fight back in France and that are going to continue because the demand now for, we've given it a shot, we've done our best, we've said one-day actions, but we're tired of these leapfrog actions that are called saut mouton, which it means leap sheep. But they're called the grève saute mouton. And people are tired. They said, no, we're just going to, you know, we have to just, we need concerted action and to show our determination, because now they're resorting to dictatorial means to impose these laws. We're not going to take it.
Yeah, if I could just comment on it a little bit. You know, what we saw in Spain a couple of years ago was this attack on wages and so forth to drive down business costs. This is what was called a kind of internal devaluation. You know, you can devalue your currency and make your exports more competitive, right? And that's what's been going on as well with the European Central Bank, you know, driving down interest rates by these massive liquidity injections, which, you know, Japan and the U.S. and all of them are doing. But the problem is that the global economy is slowing down everywhere, and trade is slowing down everywhere. So devaluation by currency, exchange rate devaluation, isn't getting much traction anymore in a slowing economy, global economy. So they're adding to that. Spain came up with this pilot program, I think, now that we're seeing accelerating throughout Europe, of driving down wages and reducing costs of their goods and trying to get a short-term cost advantage to you know, boost exports. So, you know, capitalist exporters do okay, but at the expense, they're really taking money from their working class in order to sell their products in a slowing global economy, which is kind of a real dead end. But Europe is focused on this export-driven growth, which has worked for Germany, because Germany has pulled it off at the expense of the rest of Europe. In other words, sucking profits and living standards out of the periphery in Europe, and keeping itself going. And now it appears that this labor market reform thing is spreading, you know, to France and elsewhere. Of course, it's always been an issue in Greece and Portugal and Italy, even places like that. But it's all indicative of a growing intensity of attacks, I think, on working class here, and it's not just aimed at jobs and nominal wages, but it's aimed at what I call the social wages, which, you know, like Social Security and things like that, which are just deferred wages of one kind, and pensions, which are deferred wages. So the attack is broadening on wages and workers' incomes everywhere as a way to you know, keep the capitalists afloat and expand, you know, their profit margins and protect themselves, and even, you know, expand their share of income at the expense of everybody else. All the boats aren't rising anymore. You know, they're trying to sink the workers' boats in order to keep theirs afloat. But this is something that's been going on and you know, everywhere, and in different degrees and different forms. A labor market reform, you know, is really global. It's not just in France. They call it that, but I think what's interesting in France is that you got some resistance finally, and as you indicated, the students were involved in this, but not over student demands, but over you know, their future livelihood as workers. You know, I mean, so students as workers. Not, I mean, this isn't about reform the college curriculum or anything like that, right? This is about what's going to happen to us, you know, when we have jobs, because everyone's getting these crummy part-time contingent jobs or worse. And by the way, the same crap is going on here in the United States. So many young people graduating from college can't get jobs. You know, unless you've focused on IT or something like that, you might be able to get a job in Silicon Valley. But you know, they're all running around working now for nothing in the U.S. Some of these students come to companies and they say, "Gee, we'll work for nothing just to get the experience, just so you can see us." I mean, that's the epitome of exploitation. You know, you can have all my wages here. You know,
yeah.
Not just some of the wages. And those forms of exploitation are accelerating everywhere, and young folks everywhere are just, you know, they're getting fed up with it, and I can't blame them. Boy, they're at the tip of the capitalist spear, and they're being poked over and over again. Not just there, but here in the U.S. as well.
Just one point about the French students, if I may.
Sure.
I think that the point that you make, that it's around their future, it's around their jobs, it's around their careers, is key. But there is an aspect that they link to the modification. There's proposals underway to reform the universities in France, which are public. It's much like the city colleges and across the United States. They're free institutions. They have ethnic studies. They have broad curriculums around general programs, liberal arts. And these now are being shut down in the name of the needs of the new economy. People are being told, we don't need this many universities because the jobs that are needed need more technical people who are trained in computers. And so you have across France reforms to shut down liberal arts, to shut down programs like ethnic studies, women's studies, dismantle universities as a place of thinking and critical examination with philosophy and other departments. These are now considered expendable. And the community, the students, the parents, and others are saying, hands off our universities. Our students deserve a better future. They deserve training. We, as a society, need critical thinkers, not people who just push widgets. And so there is an aspect in the student mobilization that says against the reform of high schools. Now, what's interesting is yesterday it was high school students mostly, not university, because they're beginning these reforms in the high schools. And they're tracking people now away from and shutting down any, sciences and others, because, after all, they don't need that. That's already been taken care of by the Japanese or the Germans or others. So it's really dumbing down. And a very dangerous, they're saying it's a danger to our democracy, to what we stand as a people, that we, you know, everything's being placed in the needs of market reforms.
That's an interesting element of the analysis of what's going on over there. Can you tell us your sense? There's several union federations there in France, and mm-hmm. you're well aware of them. How do they line up on this question of we need to escalate the protests and the strikes? I mean, are the federations all behind it, or just one or two of them? Or what's the lay of the land there in terms of union federation, CGT, or whatever support
federations? Yeah, the two main federations in France are the CGT and the CGT Force Ouvrière, which is just mostly known as Force Ouvrière, but they both have their roots in the main federation in France. It was formed in 1905 with a program, by the way, of socialism and class struggle. That was the period of huge development of the unions across Europe. And there's still that reference to, you know, we need to fight to overturn the capitalist society. The CGT and Force Ouvrière have opposed the reform and have called for it to be withdrawn. And two smaller federations, the FSU, Force Syndicale, Unifié, and the Solidaire, Solidarity, have joined. Others have not. They're more in the camp, but we have to work to reform it. The problem and the debates are not so much about withdrawing it. The debates are these one-day actions every 2 weeks where we go out and protest and then go home? Are they getting us anywhere? People are getting pissed off that they can't get to work when transportation shut down or hospitals, and it's just pitting people against us. It's wearing us down. You know, we don't see that there's any tomorrow from these things. And so shouldn't we be ratcheting it up. And that's where the Force Ouvrière has pulled back, and the CGT is formally, well, no, their last Congress, they didn't want to allow a real discussion on this because they said ultimately what this is posing is bringing down the Hollande government. And people said, no, it's a question of getting them to pull back and to not submit for a vote, not to impose by decree this reform. And if that means that the government's going to have to fall, let it be. So the stakes
sounds
are very
to me
high.
Like the Hollande government, though, has crossed the Rubicon here, and there's no
it
way they're going to voluntarily pull back.
It has crossed the Rubicon.
Huh? Yeah.
Now with 49-3, with the use of this arbitrary being able to rule by edict, they've crossed the Rubicon. But will the unions be up to the task and rise to the challenge? And that's the big debate that's taking place every day. It took place on the picket lines yesterday. I got reports this morning of the discussions and that this call for the withdrawal, for general strike until the government withdraws its plan, that's getting more and more traction because, you know, you can go on 5-6 day national days of action, and if the government's digging in its heels, you know, then you got to do something else. And that's what's being debated. So that's really where the unions are. It's not a question of them not accepting. They're not accepting, but are they going to be able to rise to the challenge, to the occasion? That's the big debate.
Which direction do you think momentum is running in the unions? Is it moving in that direction,
momentum,
or what?
Yeah, momentum is moving in that direction, but at the same time, the top leaderships are wavering and are largely they have ties to the French Communist Party, which is part of the government, to the Socialist Party, which is ruling, to the Left Front, which is in and out of the government. So they're, you know, it's not that these unions' tops are totally independent and just answerable to the members. Let me give you an example. The CGT Congress, which took place with 1,000 delegates 3 weeks ago, there was a slate that formed for the withdrawal of the demanding that the government, that the union take a position demanding this, calling for a strike until the government withdraws its plan. And that slate wasn't allowed to speak. There were maneuvers done by the leadership to prevent them from speaking. Now, two or three of them managed to speak because they hadn't been listed as part of the slate, smartly. And when they spoke, they brought the house down. And the newspapers the next day said the sentiment is overwhelming against the government and for a nationwide general strike. But the leadership is hesitant and didn't want to give them the floor. So that's just a sign of what happened at the Congress. You can see that there's a bureaucracy. There's a labor bureaucracy in France too. And they don't just act, they're not just simply the voice of the ranks. You know, if it would be great if it were, because that would mean the obstacles are out of the way, but there are a lot of obstacles at that level.
So they don't want to embarrass the Hollande government. Are there elections coming up soon? Is that in this scenario?
There are elections in November for the municipal elections nationwide.
Okay. And I understand that the Hollande government is not very popular.
No,
in general.
It's not. It's not. It came to power. It was a step forward in that, you know, they threw out the right wing, but it's been implementing all the policies of the right wing. It's a little bit like the Democratic Party. They're doing what the others couldn't get away with because they somewhat have the the legitimacy of being progressive or that facade, but it's more of a facade than anything else. They've been the most, the Hollande government since 2012 has been the most reactionary government under, of the Fifth Republic, carrying out attacks after attacks. They, and this would be something you'd be interested in. They, in the name of the productivity in the European Union dictates, they let the bosses who've been paying high taxes, they gave them tax breaks of 52 billion euros in order to modernize the plants and this and that. But there's no accountability. There's been none of that. And what modernization has often been is plant closures. So it's very unpopular.
How about within the Socialist Party itself? Are they all united behind Hollande on this labor market reform thing, or are there splits in that?
No, they're splits. That's one of the reasons that they can't, that Hollande doesn't have a majority to get this thing passed in the National Assembly and possibly even the Senate, which is supposed to vote on this on the 17th of June. So they haven't been able to get it passed. They have fissures at all levels, the Aubry wing. There are different people vying to have their slates win the municipal and then ultimately the congressional elections next year. So it's because the sentiment in the population is so overwhelming. 78%, according to the polls yesterday, are an absolute call for the withdrawal of this plan. And that's the polls that they themselves control. You know, polls can often be lies. And they can't hide that. They can't hide this. And their wings saying, Hollande, you're just radicalizing. You're pushing the nation to an impasse, and where the only solution is going to be a nationwide general strike that risks, you know, overturning the whole apple cart. And be careful what you're doing, because the unions are not buying into it, and they haven't been able to co-opt the unions into the round table, the social dialogue that the minister, Myriam El Khomri, has been demanding. So it's a polarization and a radicalization in France like hasn't been seen, not even in 95 when they defeated the Juppé plan and forced the government to withdraw the reform of the single-payer healthcare system. So, yeah, it's quite something to behold.
How do the other parties in France line up? You know, I mean, the National Front, which is, I think, is this right-wing party here, and some of the other parties. Where do they stand on this issue?
National Front is a reactionary party. It's a nationalist, right-wing, racist party. People compare Trump to Le Pen, who died, but his daughter's now in charge of the party. The other parties, the Left Front, wavers. It's in and out. The people I'm associated with are the Democratic Independent Workers Party, which has a real presence in the two main trade union federations and the teachers and the youth. It's a small party, but it's been consistent in presenting much of what I'm presenting to you is largely through their prism, and not just them. There are people who are part of the anti-capitalist party that are also in the streets calling for the pretty much the same thing, though there are splits and divisions everywhere. You know, it's a very splintered left, and that the French Communist Party, having long ago bought into these reforms, their wings. There's more fissures within the French Communist Party than there are within the Socialist Party.
How can the Communist Party actually support these reforms? Is that what you just said? You said the French Communist Party supports these reforms?
Yes. It's supported a lot of the reforms to date. At this point, L'Humanité 2 days ago had an editorial Maybe it's time to begin to go beyond the strikes and protests to be a more proactive and constructive opposition. So they're saying maybe we should sit down and negotiate. So they have to, you know, their base is absolutely opposed, but, you know, they've been in bed with the government and with the plans of the bosses for far too long. There is a huge opposition within the French Communist Party, but and including among their youth wing, that's the most radical. They're the ones that have been out in the streets and their heads are being smashed and bashed in the north. But, yeah, the French Communist Party is not the militant party that people think it is.
So the resistance, organizationally, to the extent there is organizational resistance, it sounds like it's a lot of it's spontaneous, is really the main union federations, the CGT and FO, I guess, right? Is that correct?
There are other movements, the movements for communal democracy. There's, you know, I don't want to say it's only, because these issues confront more than the labor movement. People in the universities are tying it into the defense of public education. People who are, so you have a lot of support in the population that goes beyond just a labor issue. You wouldn't have 70%, 80% of the population just speaking out in favor of unionism. It's because the unions have been able to make the point that defense of the labor code is a future for your son and daughter. Defense of the labor code means opposing the reforms to the healthcare system, which would mean that you have to pay copays that are 5 times, 10 times, 50 times anything you've paid, and you don't have to pay anything actually in France. So they've made the case that the reform of the labor code concerns everybody because it's the advanced point of the boss's offensive on every terrain. So that has been very effective.
Where would you tell listeners they can go to find out more about these issues and the ongoing day-to-day developments over there? Are there websites that you want to let them know that they can?
Well, we're putting together a lot of this will be put up on the Labor Fight Back Network website, laborfightbacknetwork.org.
Can you explain what that is for the listeners a little bit?
The Labor Fight Back Network is a coalition of union activists, community activists in the United States that are fighting for an independent working class politics, for independent workers' party, labor community, independent labor community candidates, for fight backs and mass actions in the streets, which support reform movements in the unions around issues. But it's about bringing back fight back into the labor movement and work with, you know, a lot of people. We work closely with the Labor Notes and others. But most specifically, our concern is about developing a political instrument, political party of workers, community, students, youth that's independent of the Democrats and the Republicans. And that's where a lot of these other currents aren't willing to go yet. So we're big advocates of independent politics. And in that vein, we work with and collaborate with like-minded folks around the world. And so we've been it's not a major focus, but we've been in touch with and will be providing information about all of these struggles. And we're just getting our website up and functioning. But I urge people just to go to the laborfightbacknetwork.org.
So one long word, laborfightbacknetwork.org. And there's going to be reports or day-to-day, descriptions of what's going on in France and where to go to find more information and so forth.
Yeah. And we're right. Also, okay, you know, I'm an editor of the Organizer newspaper, and I'm an activist, socialist activist. We have socialistorganizer.org, which we're getting our website back up and running. It was hacked. So you can go to socialistorganizer.org for more information.
Okay. Yeah, and I would urge listeners, to keep following this, not only because it this France, this labor market front, not only because it is an expression of you know, the attacks that are going on and attempts to not only squeeze more wages out of workers, but also tax on social benefits, social wages, as I call them, like you know, Social Security, retirement, and deferred wages, as I call them in my book. I have a chapter 13 in my book called Labor Market Restructuring, which is very relevant to this discussion. I'm referring to my, if I can plug myself here, my January 2016 book, Systemic Fragility in the Global Economy, which looks at the rise of the new finance capital elite and how they are gathering more and more control of the global economy, but also talks about not just financial restructuring, but Chapter 13 talks about labor market restructuring. In other words, at the same time that they're funneling trillions of dollars in buybacks to themselves, they are at the same time squeezing and attacking living standards of the general populace more and more in, through labor market restructuring. And in that, I talk about, you know, some of these things we've mentioned here today from a more theoretical point of view, but focusing on how corporations are developing new ways and not to just to attack nominal wages. In other words, what you're paid now, that's going on and always will, productivity and, you know, work days, work week kind of attacks, but also the new forms of going and attacking you know, Social Security and Medicare, and which are social wages. In other words, these are wages that workers foregone when they were working so that they could collect these wages when they retire. Well, you know, all this attack on social benefits is really an attack on wages indirectly. And then pensions, the attacking pensions and eliminating pensions is really another form of wage, a deferred wage, as I call it. So to understand the broad perspective of how they're attacking everything, you know, you can go to my website, Kyklos Productions, K-Y-K-L-O-S Productions.com for that book, or my blog, jackrasmus.com, or just go to Clarity Press, where the book is available, also on Amazon, etc. But, you know, that chapter is relevant to everything we're talking about. What this stuff in France is a historic specific example of, the latest developments in that particular area. So having said all that, I'll just shut up and stop plugging my own book, but it is relevant here. And we'd like to thank you very much, Alan, for coming on and telling us what's going on in France. And if this thing explodes here, as it very well might, over a period of time here, and if they move to a general strike, which seems very, very possible. You know, general strikes only work when you have a specific demand. And boy, they got a specific demand, withdraw the changes in the labor code. But if that happens, would you be willing to come on and give us a further eyewitness report?
Absolutely. I'm glad to be on your show and appreciate all the work you've done. And by the way, what you say, get back to people in Europe, too.